Hello, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of TF Labs podcast. I have some friends on here with me, and we're going to be talking about some interesting stuff, things that you probably heard about in the news, like the Stable Act that just got, or sorry, is being proposed, which will do some things for regulation and have some big effects. So, got a few folks here who are experts or well versed on the stable coin side, and we have some legal professionals here as well. So let's go ahead and just get started. I'll introduce myself real quick. I'm Jonathan G. Blanco, founder of TF Labs. We're a startup studio as well as an agency. Do a lot of things in the blockchain and crypto space. I'm just going to introduce you all in the order that you're on my screen. So Michael, you want to go next?
Hey,
You're
Michael,
muted,
you're on
bud.
mute.
Still muted.
Thanks, Jonathan. I'm a serial entrepreneur and investor focused on blockchain and digital assets. I'm the founder and CEO of the GDA Group of Companies, which is a vertically integrated group of blockchain companies focused across the digital asset capital market. I'm also the co-founder of the World Stablecoin Association and the managing, which is a nonprofit and an advocacy group focused on positive regulations for stablecoins. And I'm the managing director of the XDB Foundation, which is also a nonprofit foundation that is focused on building out the digital bits ecosystem. Focus on branded currencies and branded stablecoins.
Excellent. Nice. Jill, you want to go next, please?
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Jill Williamson. I'm an attorney at Gravis Law here in Seattle. I represent a number of stablecoin and other crypto companies and do focus a lot of my work in the regulatory compliance space of crypto and blockchain.
Excellent. Corey.
Hey everybody, my name is Corey. I'm the CEO and founder of Stably, based here in Seattle as well. We are a stablecoin fintech startup, also specialized in asset tokenization. We work with a wide range of enterprise clients and B2B clients, as well as blockchain foundations to connect assets from the real world to the digital world. And we actually create quite a number of stablecoin products ourselves. So I'm pretty familiar with this space.
Nice. And Bob, can you round us out, please?
Certainly. My name's Bob Cornish. I'm a partner at Anderson Kills Law Offices in Washington, D.C. I'm a financial services attorney, been practicing for 25 years, handle work in crypto and blockchain as well. And I'm also a member of the Wyoming Blockchain Coalition and admitted to practice in Wyoming.
Excellent. Thanks so much. For those of you that are watching, this is a live recording, so we can see your questions and your comments. Let's please just start out. Give us a shout out. Let us know where you are watching from. What city are you in? And of course, ask your questions as they come up. We will do our best to answer them throughout the show. So with that, let's use the Stable Act as kind of our point of reference. Do one of you want to just share what happened what was that last Monday, I think it was, with the Stable Act? You're muted, Jill.
That tricky mute button.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta be considerate, background noise, dogs. It's a whole thing. I'll give a quick overview. On the second, so exactly a week ago today, Congresspersons Tlaib, Garcia, and Lynch introduced what they're calling the Stable Act. The Stable Act, it does a number of things aimed at what Congressman Tlaib says is the prevention of taking advantage of the un or underbanked, but primarily it relies upon the constitutional power of Congress to coin money, regulate the value of foreign coin, and fix the standard of weight and measures. It also relies upon the Federal Reserve Act, the Banking Act, and the Federal Depository Insurance Act. And it adds stable coins to the list of things that are considered deposits, which then relates to the definition of a depository institution, which would bring issuers of stable coins into then the definition basically of depository institutions that would be regulated under, there's a variety of regulations, but among others, the Federal Reserve Act and the Banking Act. It also has a few pretty specific additions to those regulations specific to stable coins, which would include any depository institution would require advance approval before it could issue a stable coin. It would require that the issuer maintain the peg, so ensure that the redeemable value never goes below what the value of the pegged currency. Maintain redemption value, maintain a reserve, a one-for-one reserve if the stable token is not insured. It would also require that stable coin issuers give certain disclosures, or it actually anyone involved in the stablecoin would be required to give certain disclosures, including whether or not they are the issuer, whether the deposit is insured, and whether the stablecoin is fully collateralized or not. The last thing of note for me, and a matter of some puzzlement, is that it says that stablecoins aren't allowed to use the term dollar. Not specifically US dollar, but just quote unquote dollar, which I find puzzling given the number of currencies around the world that are called dollars. But that's a quick overview. Basically, it would require that stablecoins be issued by depository institutions and regulated in that manner. And so that I think that's a quick overview that helps understand the impact that it might have on the industry.
Yeah, thanks for that tone. Bob, you were saying something about like the size of the stablecoin market, essentially, before we were talking.
Yes, it's approximately $135 billion a month in trading volume or exchange volume. And in the grand scheme of things, that isn't terribly significant in the financial services world when we're looking at trillions of dollars being traded every day. But the devil's in the details with this bill. It's clearly not a bill that is designed to get traction to pass anybody, pass Congress, or get a vote to get to a next level somewhere. This is clearly a bill where people are staking out policy positions for later use. And I think that's the one thing the audience needs to understand, is that many times in Washington, people write bills for the purpose of staking out positions in policy that they can use in an election or with their constituents later down the line. But be that as it may, there are a couple of troubling things in the bill that I found somewhat odd. The fact that we talked about regulatory approval. What we didn't talk about was how much approval was required. There's three levels of approval that are required under this act. My understanding is that it's the FDIC, the Federal Deposit, and another banking regulator, probably the OCC, within 6 months of having the coin registered. Meaning that for the purpose of someone who's involved in the stablecoin business, they have to go through the entire FDIC audit process to have their risk and compliance engines evaluated for the purpose of making sure that whatever it is they're providing is the equivalent of something safe and sound in the banking world. And that's the phrase that the bankers generally use, is a bank is safe and sound, meaning that the money is actually there when people come to make a run on the bank, which is somewhat odd in a sense because the FDIC only insures accounts up to $250,000. So what this means is that if you have stablecoin in excess of $250,000, you're really looking to the stablecoin issuer going to the Federal Reserve and providing some evidence or audit proof that there are reserves, in fact, there for the backup that stablecoin. There's clearly issues, I think, in terms of what fees are being charged, what people are doing with these coins. People, I think, in the underbanked communities fear that stablecoins are going to be the open chute to businesses around the United States, mainly Facebook and others, to creating script for people that essentially is skirting rules of exchange and fair dealing. And, it's just like going, like the country music song about going to the company store, using some script to buy, a can of beans for $6 that some coal mine issues you. I mean, those are the kinds of realities that folks in Congress are grasping with, whether they're real or imagined. You have to appreciate where they're coming from, notwithstanding the fact that what they may believe is not true or somewhat misguided.
Sure. So, Corey, I'd love for you to chime in. You being on this a stablecoin company, CEO of a stablecoin company, what does this do to you? Is this something that you are worried about, or do you feel this isn't probably going to actually affect you because maybe it doesn't get passed? How does this affect your conversations? I'd love to understand that.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's a really good question. I first of all, as a industry insider who's on the private side of things, in the private sector, who is actively working with regulated institutions and even enterprise clients that issue these type of products, I find that this stable act, this proposal, this bill proposal, like Bob said, is more making a statement more than it is designed to be passed. But however, it is worrisome that there are politicians out there that are staking, basically echoing their future positions in advance of the upcoming administration change and potential change policies. It is our part as industry leaders and CEOs and executives in the stablecoin sector to reach out to policymakers and politicians and regulators and generals to really try to help educate them and make them understand, this technology and not make any sort of reactionary or, potentially harmful regulatory decisions that could seriously impact the fate of this entire industry. And I'm really talking more about the United States because this is really more of a USA issue. There are other companies all over the world, there are entrepreneurs all over the world, and even governments now that are looking into creating digital currency, stable coins, backed by either fiat currencies or various type of asset classes, not just fiat currency. That innovation and progress is not going to stop because the United States decides to pass some sort of, anti- or unfriendly stablecoin regulation. It's still going to continue to grow and proliferate outside the U.S. So, it's worrisome that there are people in our government that are thinking about doing this because that really doesn't help the U.S. It actually hurts the United States in the long run. It will kill innovation in the U.S. stablecoin industry as well as asset tokenization industry. And it will literally, just take all these business opportunities offshore. I mean, I've been in this industry, I'm kind of aware of this. Whenever we have a client that are looking to issue like a stable coin or asset-backed token products, one of the top things on their mind is they want to avoid the United States. I mean, they don't want to be involved with US regulations or with US regulators. So, who lose out in that situation? US consumers. you know, the U.S., the American people, and also American entrepreneurs like myself, you know, we lose out on this because then we, you know, we can't do business on American soil. We can't, you know, be able to generate value from this and pay American taxes. We got to go serve, you know, offshore markets and target other people. So I think, you know, people who are designing this bill, they have, I'm pretty certain there's other underlying agenda that is beyond just protecting, quote unquote, protecting the consumer, because this act, if you really read through it, it doesn't really do that. If anything, it actually promotes banks, big, large banks. It promotes, you know, stable coins issuance activities to be concentrated in the hand of large banks. And, you know, that's Bank of America, JP Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo, et cetera. All these names that, frankly, you know, a lot of time when I ask people like, hey, what do you think about a Bank of America stablecoin or Wells Fargo stablecoin? Frankly, most people don't want them. They don't like it. Most people will tell me they would trust a Facebook coin over a Bank of America coin. So,
so you kind of put it right there. So I think that's really interesting, right? You said most people would trust a Facebook coin. Yesterday, Facebook got hit with an antitrust lawsuit from, I think, 48 states and the federal government. There's no surprise that the government has not really liked Facebook's ambitions of creating their own currency, a stablecoin. I think Facebook also did a very poor job of articulating what they were going to be doing to begin with. Does anybody here think that maybe the Stable Act has something to do with a direct attack on Facebook? Is Facebook ruining it for everybody? It feels as such, right? It seems there. Anybody want to dig into that?
Right. Right. I think, you know, the act clearly doesn't condemn stable coins. I think it condemns the purveyors who may be perceived to be the creators of them, other than Corey and other small to medium sized businesses. Invariably, if you look at the act and the way it's drafted, it's specific, the level of regulation and the amount of money it would take to get one of these things through, unfortunately, actually plays into the hands of a Facebook or a Bank of America, because like it or not, it's tens of millions of dollars that will have to be spent by purveyors of stable coins to go through that gauntlet of approval and regulation, not just once, but virtually annually. And as well as to be open to inspection and audit, not only by federal regulators, but, you know, a company's own auditors, because, you know, there are disclosures that these companies are going to have to make. They're going to have to be, you know, sworn to truthfulness, and you're almost going to start running into these Sarbanes-Oxley kind of problems that really don't have much of a place in a tokenized economy. And other countries recognize this. And what I find ironic is north of the border, there were two Canadian stable coins issued the week that all of this stuff came down in the US. Nobody in Canada is banging on the doors, you know, rattling pots saying, well, gee, you know, we can't have stable coins because, you know, we're afraid of anti-competitive activity. I mean, Canada's has a very regulated economy and a very regulated banking sector. The problem, frankly, is that you have monopolistic behavior here in the United States that has gotten the hair on the backs of people in Congress very worried. And you are going to continue to see these reactionary kind of bills come forth until, frankly, I think these folks go away.
No, I think that's 100% right. I think, you know, Facebook definitely, in the way that they, you know, announced that they were going to issue the Libra without taking, you know, what a more traditional company might take, which is a slower approach, doing some pre-work with Congress, some pre-work with regulators, you know, and that pre-work would provide assurances about the protections, the consumer protections, you know, but having not laid any of that groundwork, you know, of course, the announcement of that Facebook was now basically going to become, you know, in addition to having a revenue bigger than the GMP of many countries, it was now going to have its own currency.
Well,
it wasn't even going to be a bank. It was going to have its own currency, but not be a bank. Now, they might have been a regulator. They may have been an MSB, but, you know, MSB regulation covers, you know, some consumer protection and anti-money laundering, but not the full range of concerns that bank regulation covers about stability of the bank and fees and you know, disclosure. So, yeah, I think that this is 90% a reaction to the idea that Facebook now can be bigger than many countries and have its own money.
Yeah.
And far less a reaction to, you know, the reality, which is, you know, if individuals who are worried about access to cost-effective and efficient banking to, you know, the poor, the underprivileged, the unbanked, unlocking technology is the answer. Unlocking technology and decoupling some of these banking attributes, these banking services from big banks is the answer to getting, underprivileged, disadvantaged, unbanked, underbanked folks. It's the answer to getting services to that population. It's not the problem.
Right. It's unfortunately there is a bad experience essentially, or really honestly, I take it as bad branding and bad marketing on Facebook's point or on how they delivered what they were doing. So, you know, for me, for example, if I'm Facebook, you know, you're coming in and you're saying, we're going to do all these big grandiose things. Wait, pump the brakes. You're not going to become your own currency. Facebook has probably the best interaction model of any website out there, right? At least in the top percentage of it. It would have been so much easier to just say, hey, we love our users. We love our customers. We want to reward them with a loyalty point. And this loyalty point helps you, buy things in the Facebook ecosystem, and it's only in the Facebook ecosystem. I honestly think if they would have come at it from that point of view, they wouldn't have experienced so much heat. And then if they had secret plans to become a currency, so be it. But at least you're kind of like, you know, starting out slow, where they did the opposite, right? We're going to become like this replacement currency for some of the world's unbanked and so forth, which, you know, we all know on this room and probably most of us listening that's just code word for we want to figure out ways to make money as opposed to like truly serving the unbanked in that regard. That's my opinion. Michael, what do you think on all this stuff?
I think stable coins are inevitable. It adds too much value for it to not happen. The market's going to demand it. I think this Stable Act has slowed down innovation in America, and as Corey mentioned, is pushing it out of America. I think Facebook is for sure going to come to market with a coin. I think that every bank that stays in business is going to come to market with a coin. I think every enterprise, every institution is going to come to market with stable coins for use within their ecosystem.
You know, we think of stable coins as like this banking mechanism, but if it's just a representation of something else, right? You know, being currency or whatever, having a representation as a point or this or that, like there's no reason why any institution, like you're saying, Michael, or any enterprise or company shouldn't want to have their own stable currency. Your whole goal in life as a corporation is to keep people in your network, right? Like that's the reason why you see the ability for there to even be antitrust lawsuits out there. It's like whatever you can do to keep people in your network, and you know how people transact is obviously one of those things as well.
Yeah, it's basically an iteration of the branded credit card, you know, the store brand credit card. It's the store brand stable coin. You use it to transact online. But I would say, you know, one thing I didn't mention, which I should have, that's embedded in this bill, which is also extremely problematic, but also an indicator that this bill was not drafted or presented in, you know, with any intent of it actually passing. And it's the notion that stablecoins are money. You know, every regulator today, every federal regulator who has an interest in financial regulation has said that stablecoins, cryptocurrency, is not money. It is either a security or a commodity. Probably one of those two. Maybe there's a variation that's neither of those two that I haven't come across yet. So I don't want to be, you know, the lawyer in me doesn't want to be 100% definitive, but, you know, 99 times out of 100, it's either a commodity or security, but it's not money. And to call it money creates, you know, not only a lot of regulatory problems, but also creates a lot of problems for the industry insofar as there are a lot of platforms out there operating entirely legal systems that are based on the premise that cryptocurrency is not money. Right. And so even if they're not affected by the, you know, even if they're not stablecoin issuers, they would be affected by this bill and the notion that cryptocurrency and stablecoins are money.
We have to remember that currency, you know, there's a reason the words "this bill is legal tender" is on a dollar bill. That legal tender represents an obligation of the United States to honor that dollar. And now you have, with stablecoin purveyors, someone co-opting that legal tender status, arguably for profit. That doesn't sit well with populist-leaning members of Congress. There are still things in the banking bills that are problematic. I think the depository institution issue with these stable coins is a leap of faith in a number of aspects. Imposing bank obligations, security obligations, AMLs, KYC obligations on the very currency that's backing the stable coin, it just totally misconstrues how these things actually work. And, you know, you can delve real deep into some of the arcane rules in the US code. One of the funny ones that you don't think, I mean, hardly anybody does it, but I mean, I haven't checked to see if anybody's ever been prosecuted for it lately, but, you know, I cannot, under U.S. law, secure debt with a physical metal coin minted in the United States. That's a felony. There's still stuff like that laying around in the U.S. code that actually prohibits people from engaging in day-to-day transactions. And what's problematic about this act, frankly, is that it's a, you know, it's a reactionary, but two, it doesn't take into account some of the real endemic issues that exist elsewhere in our laws and regulations that make the use of these products somewhat ungainly at the moment. There's a very good purpose and a very good reason these coins should be used by a lot of people. And frankly, our statutory scheme is not very inclusive at this moment.
Well, it's like you're saying, it's stifling innovation. It's the equivalent to the auto manufacturers pulling out the railroad system in, you know, in L.A., right? And now we have crazy traffic in L.A. So, Jill, you look like you wanted to chime in there.
Well, I was just going to say, it's to me, it's a puzzling bill insofar as I don't see how it fixes the problems that it purports to address. You know, to Bob's point, it just doesn't, you know, there are much easier fixes. You know, if you're concerned about consumers, if you're concerned about fees or rates, or, you know, you can, you know, a consumer protection bill that brings this in, that requires some disclosures, that can, you know, that's simple. It doesn't require picking apart all of the arcane banking laws on top of, you know, that, you know, I mean, that the intersections of this bill between FinCEN and Treasury and OCC and you know, that the statutory framework that goes back, you know, to the beginning, the founding of our nation. I mean, it's, I would not start with amending banking law. Well, I wouldn't start there for almost anything, but certainly not to fix what they purport to be the issues that they're trying to address. And I find that a puzzling approach as well. I really have a hard time understanding why they didn't just slap a consumer protection bill out there and say, you know, you have to disclose these things. Maybe it has to be backed. None of that requires digging into the bowels of banking law.
Yeah. Hey, we're getting a ton of great, great conversations going in the different channels across YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you all for commenting there. I just want to take a pause for a second. If you, wherever you're watching this, please just do us a quick favor and either tweet it out or share it out on whatever social channels you might be watching this. Help us continue to grow these conversations and get more people involved. Last, with that, please start asking questions, and we're going to do our best to answer them as they come up. Corey, what you think, man? What else is going on from your perspective throughout all this?
I'm wondering if this is something that you know, the politicians are quietly working on to preface, like, the launch of a U.S. Fed coin, like a federal stable coin somehow, or a CBDC. That's just my speculation, or conspiracy theory, I guess, but no clear evidence there. Well, I guess that's just, I'm just throwing that one out there.
Well, let's dig in on that for a little bit. So, like, if there is a Fed coin, you know, I'm a product manager, and I help companies, like, think through, like, their use cases and, like, develop the whole product strategy around it. So I like to do that even for things I disagree with. And so if you think about it, a Fed coin makes so much sense from a U.S. government perspective. Like, why wouldn't you want to have a more traceable form of money, right? Like, that just makes sense if you are the entity of the U.S. government. And that's not necessarily, I'm not saying that's good or bad. It's just, it makes more sense for everything from bills that are being paid to taxes that need to get paid to being reimbursed. If we all had, you know, an FDIC or a Fed coin type of wallet, and that's how we get our stimulus checks, for example, right? It makes sense. Now, is that good? Is there issues that come around from that? You know, probably, but go ahead, Bob, what do you think?
I have my own little conspiracy theory about all of this, but, you know, like most conspiracy theories, it makes sense to me, but probably not to a lot of others. But, you know, one of the things that we have to always remember is that there actually is a stable coin available in the United States. It's called a postage stamp. You can actually use those stamps and go to, use them. You know, they are recognized as, you know, you can use them to exchange, and they are money that's being exchanged with the arm of the federal government in return for something that can be used for another task. There has been talk, especially Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont, has taken the point that the Postal Service, you know, are one of the whipping boys during the last election. The Postal Service can take the reins and become a substitute for mass banking services. And the idea of digitizing obligations of the government that are already created through postage media could very well be done, especially if, for example, somebody is getting paid in that postal script, for example, they can exchange it and get a money order or a check. Now, that's a very economic, you know, I mean, you know, for a lot of us, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but the idea that somebody can literally exchange something for some sort of negotiable paper that can flow into the economy at a minimal cost, there is your pipeline right now, and one branch office exists in every town in the United States. So, you know, everybody who's been moaning about the post office, you know, losing money, this is one of the things that's kind of been rumbling around Washington for a while.
And it's not as revolutionary as it sounds. In most other countries, the post office serves also a banking function. I know, you know, for example, when I lived in Germany decades ago, more decades ago than I'd like to admit, you know, I had a konto, a savings account at the local post office, so I could pay my local bills. And you know, and it's fairly common in other countries for the post office to serve that function. But I would say, you know, to Corey's conspiracy theory, if this were, you know, a preliminary step to quash the development of private stable coins to make way for a Fed coin, I'm going to guess that these three Congress people are not in on that conspiracy. if it were a different, maybe a different set of co-sponsors, but these are not your.
Well, and like nothing against, you know, congressmen and women, but they're not known for being like the most technically savvy, you know, individuals or you know, if you've seen any of the hearings against big tech, I mean, they're pretty brutal, some of the questions you get asked.
I mean, these three Congress people are on the younger side. So hopefully they're more tech savvy than some of those very embarrassing questioners that we saw in some of those hearings. But I mean, the fact that they're on the younger side is one of the reasons that I think that they would not be in on the whole FedCoin plan, because they're fairly junior and not likely to be of that level of influence.
Yeah.
Who knows? You know, maybe we've all seen House of Cards. Like maybe they're the fall guys for the beginning of the FedCoin implementation.
I want to turn this conversation into an Alex Jones style. No, I'm just kidding. So, you know, I'd love to move the conversation to the broader crypto ecosystem. But before we get to the broader crypto ecosystem, let's go to, you know, the granddaddy being Bitcoin. You know, does this have any effect on Bitcoin and anybody's point of view from what they've seen? It doesn't seem like this will negatively impact Bitcoin either from a price regulatory or otherwise. It seems like Bitcoin is still off on its own, but what do you all think?
I mean, first of all, it's not a stable coin.
Sure, but I just mean, but yeah. from like the broader implications, meaning like, will there be some sort of ladder effect where now Bitcoin becomes or is at the forefront of our Congress folks' conversations?
If they made it so that only banks can issue stablecoin, that will significantly decrease the options, the number of fiat on ramp that people can use to put money into Bitcoin. So I would say that would have a negative pressure on Bitcoin price. So they better not pass it.
See, I was going to say exactly the opposite, that that if stablecoins, if we have to put stablecoins into traditional banks, that's going to be the death knell of most stablecoins, or at least of most of the advantages of most stablecoins. It'll drive more people to unstable coins like Bitcoin or Ether for their crypto, for actual use as cryptocurrency. So I'm going to say exactly the opposite, that non-stable cryptocurrency will become more popular as to use as currency.
You know, Jill, I am in the stablecoin business, but I am also holding Bitcoin. What should I hope for this bill to pass or no?
For those of us that are you know, Bitcoin supporters, it's kind of like, you know, you don't worry about it because of the fact that, you know, of just the whole ethos of Bitcoin to begin with. It's like, okay, you know, so I'm sorry, stable coins, but Bitcoin will still survive and move on.
I think what's pretty interesting about this act is it will definitely, if it was to pass, it would instantly outlaw all the quote unquote outlaw of the decentralized stablecoin, because decentralized stablecoins are issued by like smart contract. They're not issued by banks or any regulated institutions, and they are
you know, they are being called stablecoin, like DAI, the one of the most popular decentralized stablecoins in the world with a couple hundred million dollar in market cap. You know, you is backed by Ethereum, deposited into a smart contract, and it's not operated by any centralized entity. You know, you can't even shut it down if you wanted to. So, you know, I think the language in that stable ad, it also, not only was it reactionary, it wasn't like they did, whoever wrote it don't know what they're talking about, because, you know, they're excluding like so many other categories of so-called stable coins that, you know, they really just wrote that bill to, I think, you know, focus on centralized stablecoin issuers like Stably and USDC and Paxos and all, but they didn't really pay you know, much attention to like the other decentralized stablecoins that are not issued by any centralized entity.
Nice. Again, those listening, what other questions do you have? Carlos asked a question about a good study on stablecoin, and it looks like he answered it also. It's called the
denationalization.
I read good. Sorry about that. but yeah, keep asking your questions as they come up. We're going to be wrapping up here soon as well. Someone asked, Joel B asked, could this law target DAO issued stablecoins, i.e., is code freedom of speech and protected?
Sorry, could you say that again?
Oh, so could this law target DAO issued stable coins is the question. And he goes, example, is code freedom of speech and protected?
So that's what I actually just talked about. DAO issued stable coin, meaning decentralized stable coin, like DAI, which is issued by MakerDAO, which is an autonomous, decentralized protocol. Basically what I just said, I don't know, you know, how that act is going to affect those stablecoin. If that act was literally passed overnight, I think it would outlaw all those DeFi or DAO issued stablecoin would be outlawed overnight, because, you know, they're not chartered, they're not licensed.
So, you know, and obviously that the question of whether code is free speech and protected by the Constitution is highly nuanced, but as a general rule, if you give it away for free, it's protected free speech. But, you know, so if you publish it, it's protected free speech. But if you profit from it, it's a commercial undertaking. It's commercial speech, and it's not subject to the same protections. So, that is a gross overgeneralization. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in 50 words or less, code can be free speech, and it can be not free speech.
But we also
must
have
profit to be denominated in fiat in legal tenders. If the profit was denominated in crypto, would this still count?
Yeah. Well, we always have to remember, you know, there's speech, but there's also, you know, the speech is only worth what somebody else perceives the value to be. That's the ultimate basis of contract, right? You know, value for exchange for value, or a promise for a promise. What we have here, right? We have a promise for a dollar. You know, somebody's promising this is worth a dollar, and somebody's promising to give something that they believe is worth that equivalent. That is commerce in action. However, as Corey and Jill have alluded, that may not be speech that is protected, because the verbal act or the actual act of making a transaction based on a representation, written or oral, of the value of that coin may well not be protected. I think that's where you start getting into the issues of what the monetary value of the code is, how people perceive the value of the code, how do you secure it, and what safeguards are actually in place to ensure that whether that thing is pegged to a dollar or a Mexican peso, that there's enough parity with that pegged currency to make the promise really something of value rather than a sham.
Yeah. So if you know, if anyone's particularly interested in the question of whether code is free speech, Bernstein v. United States is sort of the seminal Supreme Court case on that issue. It's, you know, several decades old now, but it's probably the best case we've seen You know, and of course, any subsequent case is decided under that. But Bernstein's worth a look if it's a particular interest of yours.
Nice, nice. All right, let's see some of these questions here. Looks like people like talking about the code being free speech, and that's definitely something that matters. Keep asking your questions, folks. We're going to be wrapping up here shortly. Also, just a favor, make sure that you like and subscribe, you know, to what we're doing. Question for Corey, which country is presently your favorite domicile setup for corporate entities working with stablecoins in any way? You're muted, bud. Here, I think I can unmute you.
Not only is he muted, he's on slow-mo, at least on my computer.
You're still on mute, bud. There you go.
There we go.
Now we can. But speak up, because it's a little quiet on your mic for some reason.
Hey guys, before I say anything, do not get an iPhone 12. This sucks. I'm having so much trouble with it right now. Okay, so I'm sorry, what was the question?
Oh, what country is presently your favorite to domicile set up for a corporate entity for a stable coin? Where would countries are most favorable?
It depends on, so right now we've been build stable coins or asset-backed tokens for our clients. It really depends on what the client's requirement is. If the client wishes to create a product that is U.S.-centric, that is for the U.S. market, we'll base it in the United States. We'll set up a trust that is domiciled in the United States, and you know, we'll probably use Prime Trust, which is a Nevada chartered trust company, to be the trustee and convertible virtual currency administrator for the token. If it is a product for the international market, we like to make it non-US, so we would blacklist US customers from being able to purchase or redeem the tokens. And then, you know, it would be set up usually the location that we're using right now is Hong Kong. We work with a regulated trust company over there called First Digital Trust. They are a digital asset custodian, and they also work with a lot of blockchain companies like Stably and also Trust Token. They're actually one of TrueUSD's stablecoin custodians for the reserve. So yeah, in the US and Hong Kong is for the most part is where we're domiciling most of the trust at the moment. There was this very interesting case recently where we worked with a Vietnamese stablecoin partner, and they needed to create a Vietnamese stablecoin. And Vietnam doesn't follow the common law framework. They follow civil law framework, which doesn't have the framework necessary for a trust to be set up. Right. There's no such thing as trust or trustees in Vietnam. So we ended up having to take that trust over to setting that trust up in Hong Kong instead of Vietnam.
Nice. Yeah, and you know, you're kind of just as you're talking about that, right? It's like, hey, like, why is that so difficult? You know, kind of to think through here. So, Corey or someone here, and Michael, you probably know from what you do with your organization is like, you know, how many stablecoin companies are based in North America or the U.S. comparatively to overseas, and you know, what does that makeup look like?
I think there are a fair number that have some operations in North America, but you are uncompetitive essentially as a stablecoin company if you structure your business in Canada or in the US onshore.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Are you thinking because of the anti-money laundering requirements that you can't have anonymity, which is largely desired in the space, but you know, within the US you can't really have a stable coin with anonymity?
You can't have a state. I don't think the biggest value proposition of stable coins is the anonymity. But if you treat a stablecoin as a security, and there is securities tax on transactions, or any sales tax on transactions, if you send someone a dollar and you need to pay tax on that, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Short-term capital gains and all those sorts of things that start kicking in. And of course, it makes a difference as to whether your asset is a commodity or a security, because you get to take different forms of tax treatment. That, again, you know, want to beat up on the stablecoin bill. There wasn't much in there about tax. I'll put it that way. Didn't, you know, you would think Congress would think about the tax side of this. They obviously haven't. So
in my opinion,
the bill is.
Well, if it's money, you can't tax it.
Right. I think stablecoins cannot be a security, and they cannot be, a commodity, or they become unuseful for commerce, and they add so much value for commerce. They're actually for sure going to be used for commerce. It's just a question of whether America removes themselves from this innovation temporarily, kind of shoots themselves in the foot.
Yeah. So stable coins are, you know, generally they are under U.S. regulation commodities and not securities. But that does still, you know, put them under certain regulations and also, you know, unfavorable tax treatment when you make trades.
With digital assets, if your digital asset is usable in an ecosystem upon launch, then your digital asset becomes a currency or becomes a utility coin within the ecosystem. I think currencies or digital assets that are backed by assets purely for transactional purposes that are not investment vehicles will be classified for as money, as currency for transactional purposes.
There's another nuance with this as well, which is in the futures business, if you were to do futures on dollars or currency that's backed by stablecoin, futures contracts generally have to have a delivery provision where the actual asset is delivered. This legislation, as I read it, creates the debt, you know, essentially, puts the square peg in the round hole by making the stablecoin a deposit instrument, which arguably could be used to fulfill delivery obligations on a futures transaction. That is an interesting issue, because then you've got slippage between the actual current, you're probably going to have the arbitrage opportunity between the actual currency and the stable currency, the back and forth that you would see. It would be somewhat amazing to, you know, if this bill, just thinking about how this bill would actually work and how financial engineers would start to try and find the arbitrage opportunities in this. This is the one I think that, you know, kind of rears its ugly head, is that you would start seeing people, you know, hedging dollars or hedging
dollars with dollar-backed stablecoins.
Exactly.
I am really enjoying and applauding the depth and detail of your regulatory wonkiness right now, Bob, because that is next level. I mean, 100% agree, but that is next level wonkiness.
But it's money.
Yeah.
Sort of.
No, but you're right.
The
unintended consequences, the knock-on effects of this are, even on a brief read, really troubling, and on a deep read, they just keep going and going.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, we're getting close to wrapping up here, so I'd love, if anybody has any final questions, please ask them in the chats. and do it quickly. And then also please make sure that you're liked and subscribed. And I'd love to give everybody here just a, you know, like a minute or so to kind of give a closing thought, and then also tell us what's the best way to get a hold of you or get in contact with you. I'll do the opposite way. Let's go Bob first. Why don't you give us a little closing thought and tell us what you think?
Sure. You know, everybody's political sensitivity is obviously at high alert right now, you know, left over from a month ago. I know this bill has rattled a lot of people. I don't think you need to be terribly concerned about it, but you should be aware that there are people who certainly have different views of the market than some others do. That being said, be an educator, be somebody who shares your knowledge with others. I'm happy to share mine with you. My email, you can find me on the Anderson Kill website, www.andersonkill.com.
Excellent. Corey, final thoughts? You got to unmute yourself, though.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, my final thoughts on this is I hope, you know, regulators and politicians alike, before, you know, they make any sort of decision that can have long-lasting impacts on the U.S. Stablecoin industry, not just stablecoin, any industry competitiveness, and you know that ends up affecting the American people. They should be talking to industry leaders, people like me, people like Jeremy Allaire from Circle, people like, you know, Brian Armstrong from Coinbase, and really, you know, gauge our opinion, or because we're in this industry, we're at the forefront of it. We know what's going on. We know who's this industry is helping, who's this industry is hurting, and you know, we can help the regulators formulate, you know, very effective policy that will help not only the entrepreneurs grow, but also benefit the end users and the people. So that's really the only message I want to put out. You know, like, talk to us before you do anything crazy.
Yeah, definitely. And what are good ways that people can get in touch with you, Corey? Corey, what are good ways that people can get in touch with you?
Yes, you can reach out to me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is Corey Huang, KoryHoang. Or you can also reach out to me on Telegram, same handle.
Excellent. Jill, what do you think?
Can I just say ditto to everything that Bob said? I don't think that this law has a chance in passing, but it is, you know, worth noting that it seemed important enough, at least for a few Congress people, to write and propose, and that it's important to, you know, be mindful that there still is some uninformed suspicion about cryptocurrency and stable coins, and you know, we need to try to stay ahead of that, and frankly expect that there will be some regulation in the next couple of years, some new regulation, but hopefully it will be, you know, more thoughtful, more carefully drafted and more precisely targeted than what we're seeing. You know, like Bob, I'm happy to educate, happy to talk to folks. You can contact me. I'm on the Gravis Law website, or it's jwilliamson@gravislaw.com.
Excellent. Michael.
Closing thoughts. All assets will be on the blockchain. All banks that stay in business will have a stable coin starting next year.
Nice. And what are some good ways people can get in touch with you?
Or you can contact me on Twitter at BitGord, or email michael@gda.capital.
Awesome. My closing thoughts is, you know, I think what we've learned and seen is that cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, stable coins officially have the eye of institutions, financial institutions, and the government, and have a seat at the table, frankly. You know, even if, however big or small, there's a seat at the table. So there's certain things that we can control, and there's certain things that we can't control. And, you know, for most of us listening, we're not going to have an impact on what the government does in the regulation. But what you can do is be in control of your own self, whether that be for you personally or for you and your company. So I always say, you know, what's your Bitcoin business strategy? What's your blockchain business strategy? What's your crypto business strategy? If you have a company and you're not thinking about these things now, you need to be, because in a few years you will have to think about it. So I just want to leave people with there. You can follow me on Twitter at JG Product and at TF Labs underscore. And for those watching and listening live, thank you so much. And thanks for adding to the channel. Please make sure you're liked and subscribed, and we'll have this on our podcast as well. And if you want to get a hold of me, you can also email Jonathan at tflabs.io, and happy to help however I can. Thank you all for listening and watching, and we'll see you all soon. We're going to have another episode on Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We're going to be talking about Bitcoin and just what's been going on there. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you all soon.
Thank you.
Cheers, everyone.